The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network.
Hold on, Scott.
Good evening. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Scott Ellsworth. Looking forward to tonight. We have a great guest with us, and I'm really excited about this this gentleman. But before I introduce Anthony, questions, if you have any, call 877-772-9658, or you can email vinaradio@gmail.com. So our guest tonight is Anthony Chara. I've known Anthony for, I think, 8 to 10 years, and I've gone to his trainings. He's president of Apartment Mentors, where he teaches people how to successfully, and that's the key, successfully analyze and invest in apartment complexes. He lives what he teaches. He's an instructor, and he's a mentor, and he's an investor. Welcome, Anthony.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
You're out in Colorado, right? Are you in the South?
No, I'm in Colorado. Just finished up a crappy 18 holes of golf and hopped on the phone to talk to you and all your listeners.
All right. So it's not snowing there yet, huh? No snow?
It is not. No, it has not snowed yet.
Wow. I guess that's – is it supposed to snow by now or not?
Yeah, it depends on the year. I think the earliest we had snow was the Tuesday after Labor Day.
Oh, my gosh.
But there's been some years that it's gone into late October, mid to late November.
That is just crazy. So we're going to get some questions, but tell the listeners a little bit about your journey into the world of apartments.
Yeah. So I was back in the corporate world way back in the 90s, and that's when my wife, Sue, and I started investing in real estate. We turned our first single-family home into a rental, moved into a larger, nicer home, but didn't know anything about apartments, so all we did for about 10 years was buy and hold, because we didn't even know you could do fix and flips or fix and holds or wholesaling or anything like that. Met a couple of mentors. One was Robert Allen back in the early 2000s, along with a gentleman here in Colorado named Ron. And they both taught me about different ways to invest in real estate. So we tried a couple of fix and flips, didn't care for that. It was too much work. And yeah. I kept over improving them. And like I wanted to live there instead of turning it into a rental property that was equivalent to the neighborhood, and did a couple wholesale deals. And that was just too nerve wracking. So I met up with another, my original partner, a guy named George Antone that you guys have had on your show quite a few times.
I know George.
And George started teaching me how to do apartments along with Robert Allen's instructor, a guy named John Dessauer. And then Ron, one of the guys that lives here that I met, taught me about apartments as well. And it all kind of came together in the early 2000s. Started going out. Our first deal was a 344-unit project in Tucson that we actually partnered with the developer on. He was converting it from apartments to A-class condominiums. So we raised about $1.35 million and joined him on a $5 million raise because he'd already bought the property. He just needed the extra money to actually do the conversion, do the upgrades to the appliances, the cabinets, the countertops and stuff like that, the flooring. And so that was our first foray into multifamily. And just kind of fell in love with it from there because it was a lot bigger paychecks and it was about the same amount of work instead of buying single family homes. So over the years, we've owned over, it was about 2004, 2005 when we did that. So about 20 years, we've owned over 2,100 units. We also own, because we're always looking for things that cash flow, because as Robert Kiyosaki teaches you in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it's, cash flow is what pays the bills. Equity's great, but you can't spend equity unless you sell or refinance your property. So we own about 40 units at a hotel called Mahogany Bay Resort down in the country of Belize. And we also own 11 Orange Grove lots and two very large greenhouses down in the country of Paraguay. And then the last thing we just got into about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, was we own about 18 short-term rentals in Memphis, Tennessee. So we do a little bit of everything trying to generate cash flow.
Oh, that is good. Yeah, cash flow is king. I tell you, I can tell my wife, I'm like, here's our net worth. She goes, really? It doesn't feel like that. Because she's like, where is it? I said, well, it's in equity. I said, the problem is you can't spend equity generally. You can borrow against it, but you can't spend it. So I agree with you. So let's talk about the market. So what are you seeing in the apartment market right now? Is it, are deals still worth chasing? So what are you seeing?
Yeah, deals are still worth chasing, but it's definitely slowed down the last couple of years. As everybody knows, you know, around COVID, it slowed down. But then right after we came out of COVID in 2021, things blew up from 21 to through 22 and almost into 23. And then, of course, inflation hit and interest rates doubled. They went from about 4%. You could literally get a 4% loan on an apartment complex, and it doubled to 8.
Wow.
And so the downside was is that even though there were deals out there, the sellers still wanted their purchase price as if it was 2021, 2022, and they just either didn't realize or didn't care that the cost of money had doubled, which means us as buyers, we want to pay less.
Right.
Because if we're not getting any cash flow, or we have to put down 30, 40, 50% in order to get the property to cash flow, well, that's not doing us any good because we're tying up too much capital in order to get the returns that we and our investors are used to seeing. So it's definitely slowed down, but deals are still getting done. And one of the things that everybody needs to understand is just real estate in general, not just apartments, but even single family homes, strip malls, mobile home parks, storage facilities, any type of real estate is basically all about the relationships. And even though things have actually slowed down, I have some people that just I'll run into them. They'll say, well, I'm not doing anything because I just can't find any deals. And the problem is they're looking for them on different websites.
Right.
Well, if you actually start creating relationships with the brokers in the market where you want to buy property, and they also handle the type of property that you're looking to purchase or invest in, there are deals actually getting done. The problem is if you don't have a relationship with them, you're never hearing about them because they never make it to the MLS. They just have somebody call them up, say they want to sell a property. They put the package together, and the first thing they do is go out to a handful of 5 or 10 people that they know like that type of deal and can get the deal done, and they go to them, and you never even hear about it. So even though things, again, they have slowed down, there's still a lot of deals getting done, but probably from the brokers that I've talked to, over 50%, probably somewhere between 50 and 60% of the deals that are getting done, you never even hear about.
Gotcha. That's the same thing I've seen, too. So, hey, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue a great conversation with Anthony. All right. Welcome back. Scott Ellsworth here with Anthony Chara. Just before we get into more content, I just want to remind everybody, if you have questions, 877-772-9658. Get on the radio and get your question answered live, or email vinaradio@gmail.com. Wanted to emphasize, too, that Anthony is actually going to do an all-day Saturday session this Saturday, the 8th. It's called How to Evaluate Apartment Buildings. It's only $47 for members of RIA GC and then $97 for non-members. And you can get the information at CincinnatiRIA.com. Same location, CincinnatiRIA.com. You can also get information on our in-person networking night. So this will be in Cincinnati, and it's on 11/6. The information is on the website, Thursday the 6th, Cincinnati. It's free to everyone. You just need to make sure you pre-register. So, Anthony, So along with market, so is if how do I decide when it's time to buy more versus when it's time to sell, or when should I hold? How do you sort of determine that?
Well, that's a great question. So for me, it's always a good time to buy, but you can't use the same strategy today that you were using a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
How so?
As far as selling, really what it comes down to the time when you're selling, most commercial loans actually have a balloon. So the loan might be amortized over 25 or 30 years, but a lot of them balloon in 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, something like that. So in our case, what we do is when we get ready, or our loan is getting ready to balloon, we generally go out to our investors and ask our investors what they want to do, and we give them some options. We start to look at the market in the area to see if there are any good properties out there that we can purchase, and if there is, we could potentially do a 1031 exchange, sell property A, move the money over and buy property B. The other thing that we look at, too, is, of course, we give the investors the option of just selling completely and then educating them so that they understand that they're going to have some recapture tax. Right? So all the capital gains and things like that and the depreciation, they'll have capital gains tax, and then some of the depreciation that we've taken over the last 5, 7, 10 years, they're going to have to recapture some of that. So even though they think they might be walking away with 50 grand, 100 grand, 200 grand, They're going to take a big tax hit,
right,
if they just want to sell it outright. And then the third option we always give them is, this is what it will look like if we refinance in today's market. So ultimately what we do is we come up with those three different exit strategies and crunch the numbers and then go to our investors and lay it on the table and get feedback from them and make a decision on how we want to move forward.
So I do a lot of evaluations of syndications, and a lot of the syndications you were talking about, the debt amortized over 20, 25, 30 years, but they have a balloon or they have a reset of interest. So do you feel there's a lot of loans out there that are going to reset to the horrible rates? They've got a good rate now, and they've got a bad rate. And do you think there'll be an opportunity to purchase some stuff at a good price?
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a good opportunity. It's actually, to be quite honest with you, Scott, it's not going to be as good of an opportunity today as it was a year ago, because interest rates have actually dropped.
That's true.
So there were a lot of people about a year ago that they were in a position where literally if they wanted to sell their property, they were going to take a big hit because interest rates had gone up to, like I said, about 8% back in 2022, 2023. They've slowly come down. So even last year, they were 7.5%. They're now down around 6% in some cases, 6.5%, depending on the type of loan that you get. Of course, there's some that are higher than that, depending on how much you're borrowing. If you're borrowing less than $1 million, you're probably going to be in the 7 to 8% range. But if you're borrowing over $1 million, you can be down around the 6, 6.25, 6.5. So it's better than it was 2 years ago, but it's certainly not back in the 4s, 4s.25, 4.5. So there are some opportunities because people that own properties that got a loan about 5 years ago, if they're lucky and then they bought it on a fixed rate loan 5 years ago, back in 2020 or 2021, if they want to keep it, they're going to take a little bit of a hit on their cash flow if all they do is refinance it. But if they want to sell it, again, it still comes down to the realization that a lot of sellers don't understand that the cost of money to a new buyer has gone up.
Right.
So we've actually seen, I've personally seen a couple of people where me and my students have been looking at properties and making offers. And probably three out of the four that we're making offers on, they just decided to refinance it, just do a no cash out refinance, just a straight what they call a rate and term refinance. It lowered their cash flow, but they still had plenty of equity. They just held onto the property. They're going to hold it for another 5 or 10 years and wait for the market to go up, which it most likely is in the next 5 or 10 years. And then they'll sell a little bit later on. So, again, it's not as bad of a hit as it was a year or two ago, but people who own properties now that need to sell because their loans are ballooning this year or in 2026, they are going to have to take either a little bit of a haircut on the sales price, or they're going to have to refinance it and sacrifice some cash flow in order to continue to maintain the property or own it.
Do you find, are there any, like right now, are there deals that are good deals? What kind of deals are getting funded, and are there any that are not getting funded, you're not going to get funding for?
Well, as far as it's hard for me to say the ones that aren't getting funded because I'm not
sure.
Actually a lender. You know, for us, we're just not buying the ones where the sellers aren't willing to do some type of a negotiation and either lower their price or give us some type of a credit back at closing that helps ease the burden of the higher cost of money. But the ones that are getting done, from what I've seen, a lot of them are from people doing 1031 exchanges because they're able to take that equity out of property A and move it to property B. And they're putting down more than just a minimum 25%. They ended up putting down 35, 40, 45% through the exchange, which helps because that lowers the amount of money that they're borrowing, which lowers their loan payments, which increases their cash flow and makes the deal more palatable.
Gotcha. For a new investor, so you obviously, you weren't a new investor, but one of your first apartment deals was a decent size. But that was obviously a sort of a unique situation where the gentleman already had the deal in hand and you guys came alongside to help him bring it to fruition. So what, like for a new investor, what size building makes most sense for a new apartment investor who wants to get into that? What would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that we did that really helped us is George, when we started way back in, I think I met George in 2003, 2004. When we first met, he had apartment experience, but I had nothing. I had never even thought about buying apartments until he and I hooked up and we decided that we wanted to start investing together. But one of the things, even with his experience, that helped us as newbies, because that's literally what we were as newbies, he had another, I think it was like a 14-unit complex that he had bought with his brothers and sister-in-laws and stuff like that in Oklahoma City. What helped us is we found other people that already had deals in the works. They already had them under contract. They were already working on funding. And what we did is we didn't know it was called this at the time, but we created what's called a fund of funds. And we went to our investors, our family, showed them the numbers, showed them how the deal was going to be split. And what we did is we created a fund to bring in investors to invest in the fund that somebody else had already started.
Okay.
And so that helped us because we didn't have that experience directly. I mean, George had some, but I had zero. And so going out and doing it that way, that helped us build our credibility over the first two or three years that we did it, because we did three or four, maybe five deals that way where we partnered with other people that already had the experience. They already had the loans lined up, so we didn't even have to worry about qualifying for a loan. But back to your question about what should a newbie do, there's two different things you can do. First off, you need to ask yourself, do you want to work with partners or not? If the answer is no, you don't want to work with investors, then what you have to do is look at your own level of experience and how much money you have in a bank account or available to you for down payment and reserves. So depending on that amount of money, that will tell you whether you need to start with a small multifamily. And I'm not a big fan of duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes simply because those loans still go on your credit report because that's a consumer loan.
Right.
Once you start borrowing money on five units and up, you now cross into the commercial loan world, and those loans do not go on your credit report. So if you can go from a fourplex to even to a fiveplex, I would recommend doing that based on how much money you have available. And it also depends on the market where you want to invest too, because keep in mind, you could have a fiveplex in Cincinnati that might be $500,000, and you might have a fiveplex in Los Angeles that's $2 million.
Right.
So it's all relevant to not only your experience, how much money you have available, but the location of the property. If, on the other hand, you're okay with partners, You just need to find a partner who has experience already, because if you have no experience or very little experience, you got 2, 3, 4 single family homes and you want to buy a 50-100 unit apartment complex, most banks are not going to loan you money to buy that because you have no experience equivalent to owning a 50, 60, 100 unit apartment complex. So you could just partner with other people. You can borrow other people's money. You can borrow other people's experience. You can borrow other people's time. You can borrow other people's net worth. There's all kinds of ways that you can get into it. So the first question is, do you want partners? Yes or no?
All right. We are, if you have any questions, call 877-772-9658 or avinaradio@gmail.com. We'll be back after this. All right. Welcome back. We are here with Anthony Chara. And I just want to remind everybody that Saturday, Anthony's doing an all-day session, How to Evaluate Apartment Buildings. $47 for members, $97 for non-members at CincinnatiRIA.com. And, of course, we have our in-person. But I will tell you on Thursday. But I'll tell you this. I have gone to Anthony. I have an apartment building, and I've done that. I've been in that market with another partner. But I still went to his training, and I still learned a lot. And I would say that even if you have been in this business, I think you can always pick up a nugget. And for that cost, it's well worth it. So get on Saturday. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com and get on there. So, Anthony, let's talk. We talked a little about the market and some financing. Let's talk about finding deals. So are there particular regions or cities that you're seeing better opportunities in and sort of class of properties, like A class, B or C?
Well, real quick before I answer that, I do want to, since you brought up the workshop, the virtual workshop on Saturday, I wanted to remind everybody of the bonuses that they get for showing up. So one of the things that they're going to get is my quick analysis software. That's $179 value. So whether you pay $47 or $97, you're already getting $179 value software. And we're going to show you how to use it on Saturday afternoon. The other thing that you're going to get is a PDF workbook that'll be emailed to everybody that registers. And lastly, in the afternoon, we want to analyze real deals, your deals, the people that show up. So those of you that are registering and coming on Saturday, thank you. Make sure you bring a deal with you so we can analyze that on Saturday afternoon. As far as where to find property, Scott, a lot of the demographics are basically saying that people are moving south. Okay. Right? As they age, as the population gets older, people are moving down to the Sun Belt. They're getting tired of the snow. They're getting tired of the cold. So I don't know if you remember a few years ago, there was about 1 million people a month moving into Florida.
Wow.
And then, of course, a couple hurricanes came through, and and a lot of them moved back out.
Sure.
And they moved a little bit further north. They moved into the Carolinas. They moved to Tennessee. They moved to Georgia.
And then there was a hurricane that went through South Carolina, was it? Is Asheville? Is that north or south?
Yeah, that was a year ago.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, it's just you can't seem to get away from it.
Yep. So a lot of the places that are usually still pretty good, they're hot in a multiple of ways. Not only is the temperature warmer, but it's hotter because a lot of people are moving to those areas. So anything like Nevada, Arizona, Texas, down around the Gulf states, not so much necessarily Mississippi and Alabama and things like that, but definitely Florida. There's still a lot of people moving to the Carolinas. And Tennessee and Georgia. But you also have to be careful, too, because some of those markets are also in what we would call an apartment recession. So Nashville, we're starting to see prices drop in Nashville. Some of the big cities in Texas, like Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, some of those areas, even Houston, the prices are dropping because they've overbuilt. I think this year they were projecting something like 40 to 50,000 new apartments in Dallas alone.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just nuts. Raleigh and Charlotte are also a couple other markets that are overbuilt. But there's still some good markets down there. The Greenville, South Carolina area is very hot. A lot of people are moving there. The what's called the Triad area in North Carolina, it's Greensboro, High Point, and Winston-Salem. That area in there is very, very hot right now. Florida, Orlando's one of those areas that's going to come and go a little bit faster just because of all the tourism that can end up in Orlando.
Sure.
So right now it's a little bit of a recession, but it usually bounces back a little bit quicker. Tampa's a good area. As far as types of properties, A-class, B-class, C-class, for the listeners that aren't aware of it, your A-class properties are generally, and it's not be-all, end-all brand new, because you can take a property that's fairly old and completely rehab it inside and out and upgrade all of the appliances, the countertops, the fixtures. You can take a B property and turn it into an A, or a C property and turn it into an A or a B. But generally, A-class properties are brand spanking new. They're gorgeous. You drive by them and you're like, wow. Usually anywhere from brand new to maybe 10 to 15 years of age. Then your B-class properties are anywhere from 10 to 15 to 20 to 30 years of age. So you can tell they're a little bit more worn out, but they're still really nice. Then you get your C-class properties, which are 25, 30, 40, 50, 60 years of age. And usually they're even a lot more tired. But again, you can put money into them and upgrade the quality and upgrade the rents. Generally, what we're looking at these days is we're looking for B-class properties, because when the economy starts going down, which it is, the economy is definitely slowing down. You're seeing even single-family home property values drop in a lot of areas around the country. A lot of people that were in A-class properties are now in – they'll move down when they start struggling. They'll move into a B-class. People in a B-class that are struggling will move down to a C-class. When the economy's going well, you've got the people in the C-class that move up to B and the people that are in B that move back up to A. So if you're in a B-class property, you're generally hitting both waves, whether the economy's going up or down. They're generally filtering through the B-class properties.
That's good. That's good. I like that idea. So what about what's your favorite source of, let's say, off-market? So I can obviously go on a lot of the commercial sites. There's places that they're listed with brokers, things like that. Do you find a good source to find off-market multifamily deals, sort of like you talked about, who you know?
Yeah, it really comes down to who you know. So one of the things that we do is we start calling around, we start interviewing. Now, we might start on the websites, but when we look at the different websites, one of the things that we're looking for is who has the most listings on the website. And then if we see a property that does meet our buy box, we'll give them a call. But even if it doesn't, we can call them directly and make that introduction. We introduce ourselves. We interview them to find out what their specialty is as far as what they look to help their clients with as far as buying and selling. But the other big thing that we do is we also ask them if they're an investor themselves, because sometimes when I talk to real estate agents, I find out that they could be one of our biggest competitors. One guy many, many years ago, when I asked him why he became a commercial real estate agent, he said, well, because this way I get first choice.
Ah.
Because people are coming to him first, and if he likes the deal, then he just makes them an offer. And it never even gets out on the open market. So the other thing that we look at is we'll ask them if they are an investor, what do they invest in? And sometimes we hear a conflict. They'll invest in the same exact types of properties that we're looking to buy, which means it can be an issue. But we still interview them. We find out how long they've been a real estate agent in the area, what they like about it, what they don't like about it. Are they an investor? And then the other thing that we do, where we've had some pretty good luck, is by going to property managers, because we're looking for property managers to manage all of our properties. I don't want to do it. Right? I'm here in Denver, and I don't own any multifamily in Denver. It's all out of state. We've owned stuff in Texas, Ohio, Kansas, Iowa, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi. Right, so a bunch of areas where I'm not going to be traveling there on a regular basis, so we're hiring a professional management company. A lot of those managers know their clients that are selling their property. They've either already listed it or they're getting ready to list it, because they call them up and they say, hey, we're getting ready to list it. Paint the place, clean up the landscaping, put in some new plants, put in some new mulch to make the exteriors look nice. And so that's also another great resource to find properties.
That is a an ideal way to do it. So, and I know there's a lot of folks who find it, they get a little nervous about, like, they want to invest near them so they can go and drive by the property. What do you say to a person who says, gosh, I live in Cincinnati, I don't want to invest in Texas because I can't drive by it?
Yep. Well, it all comes down to your personal preference. If you're one of the people that wants to drive by your property on a regular basis, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you don't obsess with it and want to drive by every day to see what it looks like and see what's going on with it. So really, for me, it just comes down to whether or not the numbers work, because as you'll find out on Saturday, and Scott, you're already aware of this, the property management cost is built right into the formulas that we use.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to me if I buy in Texas or I buy in Kansas or Louisiana or Florida. If the numbers work and it pays to have a property manager, then we buy the property. If it doesn't pay to have a property manager because there isn't enough cash flow, then we don't buy it. We go someplace else.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I've seen. I've had people come to me to help them analyze a deal. They're new and they're looking at a property and they're saying, you know, they're giving you all the numbers, and you really come back to them and you say, well, what about a management fee? What about there's nothing for landscaping. There's nothing for snow removal. And they all say they're going to do it themselves, so they don't have that. I'm like, well, you know, you have to figure that cost in. Otherwise, you're paying too much for the property and you're working for $12 an hour.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. It's like, okay, so what are you doing right now? Well, I'm working 9 to 5 and I want to work for myself. It's like, okay. But the whole idea, if you read all the investment books, and of course, if when you go to the Greater Cincinnati REIA and all the different real estate groups, REIA groups around Ohio and around the country, what are they all talking about? They're talking about generating cash flow. And the whole dream that most people buy into is this is supposed to be passive investing.
Right.
And if you quit your day job so that you can run your own apartment complex, and don't get me wrong, if you love doing that and you love interfacing with people and you love doing all your own repairs, great, go for it. But if you're like me, I'd rather be, even though I'm a crappy golfer, I'd rather be on the golf course.
Right.
Or I'd rather be in the Caribbean with an umbrella drink or doing some snorkeling or something like that. So I'm going to buy properties that have enough cash flow so it pays a manager to take care of it and I don't have to worry about it, because that is true passive investing instead of just quitting one job and giving yourself another one by you putting on the hat of manager and maintenance technician at your new complex.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a valid point. If you want to do that stuff, you want to manage stuff like that, that's fine, but you still need to understand then what your return is on that investment. They just need to understand it. If they want to do it, that's fine, but they've got to understand it. So we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk to Anthony when we get back. All right, we are back with Anthony Chara, and we are talking apartments. I do have one person who has emailed in. Maybe more of a statement, and maybe you can comment towards it, Anthony. He says, hello, gentlemen. There are hot markets out there, including the ones you mentioned in terms of weather and the popularity. One thing you did mention, I think we sort of did, is the apartments and single-family developments that are just built, not affordable, and they're empty. You also mentioned some south and west states, and you forgot water. He says there are some developments in Arizona, Nevada, and all over that have no access to that. Thanks, SK. So any comments towards that?
Well, as far as water, if he's talking about water for drinking and landscaping and stuff like that, Nevada definitely has a water problem, but Arizona does not. And just because of the way the water comes through Arizona, and I'm not a hydrologist, so I can't tell you exactly what the deal is, but for some reason they don't seem to have as much of a water issue as the state of Nevada does.
Right.
If he's talking about living on the water, certainly that would make something a hot market as well, but you have to be careful because in Florida and along the Gulf Coast, insurance rates have gone up through the roofs, and some places they've doubled. And the closer you are to the water, the higher your insurance is, just because you're more susceptible to hurricanes and wind damage and things like that.
Agreed. All right, so let's talk, but he is correct.
So there are some properties out there. There are some A-class properties, brand new, that are literally giving away 2 to 3 months of free rent in order to fill them up in certain areas. I know Phoenix is one of those areas. Dallas may be another one of those areas, or Austin that is overbuilt. So, yeah, there's some challenges there and potential opportunity, but I don't imagine a developer that's built a brand new spanking property, even if it's vacant, is going to be interested in selling it and making a huge loss. But they are trying to fill them up by giving away free rent.
Well, and I think I found that it used to be that we would constantly have incentives to get people to move into apartments. And we haven't done incentives for 10 years.
Yeah, actually, Cincinnati is one of the hot markets right now because of where they're at with affordability and the available properties that are out there. So right in your own backyard, you've got some opportunity.
All right, so we have about 10 minutes left. What I'd like to do is talk about due diligence and your team that you need. So when you're doing due diligence, what are sort of the biggest red flags when you are reviewing financial statements on a building?
Well, quite frankly, one of the biggest red flags is when the seller won't give you good data so that you can do your due diligence.
I hear you.
One of the couple of things that you need or you want to get from your property owners, from the seller, are things called the rent roll. So the rent roll is a month-by-month listing of all of the units and who's paid and how much they've paid. Then you have what's called the tenant ledger. The tenant ledger is a tenant-by-tenant accounting of that particular tenant's payment history, how much they paid, when they paid it, were there any late fees, pet fees, any penalties or something like that that was included. So that's always good to know because you want to know how consistently people pay on time or if there's people that habitually pay late. You also want to get what's called a T12, which T stands for trailing 12. So right now we're in the middle of November. So the current T12 would be October of 2025 back to November of 2024. And then, of course, if you got it under contract this month and you moved into next month, you'd want to get an updated T12, which would be November of 25 to December of 24. So it's always trailing by 12 months because you want to see what's happening with the property. One of the things that I created and helped me out tremendously, we made some mistakes on our first couple of properties because we took the seller's word for it that they only had 5% vacancy or 8% vacancy. And as soon as we closed on the property, we started having cash flow issues. And one of the things that we realized is that there's a big difference between physical vacancy and economic vacancy. So one of the spreadsheets that I created for myself when I started analyzing a property is called a rent roll analysis software, where I take either the tenant ledger or the rent roll, and I take all of the rent, just the rent, so no late fees, no pet fees, no trash, no utilities, anything like that, just the rent for rent. And the spreadsheet is set up where I can put in the rent that was collected for each unit for every month for 12 months. And at the bottom of the spreadsheet, it tells me what the economic occupancy is for not only each month, but then it gives me the total for the whole year. And a couple of times it saved our butt going forward because we didn't do too well on a couple properties when we first started up. But later on, we ended up either negotiating a better deal or canceling the deal because properties that had supposedly 8% vacancy, one of them was at 30% vacancy for the last year.
Wow.
And another one was, I think they said it was 5% vacancy. Well, it was 22% vacant.
Oh.
And it's the software is also visual, so you can take a look at it because I color code it, and you can take a look at it very, very quickly to see which units are not generating income because they're completely vacant, which ones are not generating income because somebody's living in them and they're just not paying rent, which is the worst thing you can have happen.
All right.
and then which ones are not making the full rent, and then you want to figure out, well, why are they not making full rent? Why is one person paying $800 when everybody else is paying $1,000? And sometimes you find out it's because they're the manager or a maintenance person or a family member or something like that. So it's very visual, and so that's another big thing that helps with the due diligence process, is just drilling down and diving deep into the numbers rather than just taking the seller's word for it.
Yeah, I think that's key, because a lot of people, you know, especially the realtors, they put out a pro forma. And you might just tell everybody, because they'll have that. What is the difference between sort of a pro forma and actually what you're trying to get to in your due diligence?
So we look at the numbers two different ways. We look at what has the property done for the last 12 months. And then we do our projections, where we look at the rental rates that they're getting for all the different types of units, one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom, what the market will bear. And sometimes properties, you can raise the rent 25, 50, 100 bucks pretty quickly. Sometimes you're already at the top of the market and there is nowhere to go. The third option is you may have to put more money into the property in order to raise the rent to where you really need to get it. So we look at where the property's been, what's been doing for the last 12 months, and then based on our projections of what we think we can do with the property conservatively for the next 12 to 24 months, we also get input from our property manager, because they're the ones who are basically inheriting this and telling us what they believe we can get for rent and if there's anything we need to do to the property to raise the rent. The downside, though, is with the sellers, generally when they give you pro forma numbers, which is projections or guesstimations, that's nice to go by, but we still do our research to make sure, because I've seen some where they say, oh, yeah, you can get $300 a month more in rent for these properties in this area. Well, when you do some preliminary research, you might find out that that's correct. You could get $300 more per unit per month. But when you drill down during your due diligence period, you might find that in order to get that $300 a month, it's not just as easy as buying it and raising the rent $300. You might have to put $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 into the unit in order to get that other $300 a month. And sometimes that's the part that they leave out in the pro forma numbers that you hopefully uncover during your due diligence process.
All right. That makes sense. I want to remind everybody that Saturday session this Saturday with Anthony, how to evaluate apartment buildings. You definitely need to make it. A lot of good freebie stuff comes with it. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com, and also remember tomorrow night the live in Cincinnati. So we got just a couple minutes left. So can you just mention the people that a new investor or any investor needs to put on their team when they start buying apartments to do it successfully?
Yes, so you definitely want a good property manager. That's number one. I would recommend that you find a good property manager before you start looking for properties in a particular area. Because property managers, we've learned over the years, property managers can make or break the deal very, very quickly. You put in a bad one and you could be struggling. You could potentially lose the property if they're not doing what they're supposed to do. We've had some that, as we say, they can talk the talk, but they can't walk the walk. So you give them the keys, and then they don't do what they said they were going to do, and your property struggles. So we get rid of them as quickly as possible and bring in somebody new in order to turn the property around and get it going in the right direction. So property manager's number one. Having a good CPA that not only understands the tax laws when it comes to investment property like apartments and depreciation, but we prefer to find CPAs or use a CPA that also invests in apartments and other types of property as well. Because when you live it, you understand the tax code that much better, because they're trying to maximize their own deductions.
Exactly.
Certainly, if you're going to be raising money from other people, you need to have a good attorney that specializes in SEC law, Securities and Exchange Commission law. I would also recommend a very good real estate attorney. So keep in mind, there are two completely different attorneys. One will teach you how to raise money the right way legally and get you the proper paperwork that you need to raise money. And the other one will help you through the real estate laws in the state where you're buying property. And you do need a different one in each state because the real estate laws are different. And they can help you with your contracts and potentially even help you a little bit with your due diligence. As your CPA could also potentially help you with the due diligence and unraveling all of the numbers that a seller gives to you, both the rent roll, the profit and loss statement. They can also review their past tax returns to give you a really good picture on how the property has performed and what the advantages are going forward.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Anthony. Great information. Be there Saturday. It's online class that will help you. You've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Until next time, remember, where others just see our property, we see possibility. Keep investing smart.